Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
We'll be right back. Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to episode 147 of Getting It Out Podcast. That was a 5-minute death metal song just to make sure you know you're at the right place, okay? If you lasted through a 5-minute death metal song and you're still here, then you probably meant to be here, and that's good. That was a Feather and Bone out of Denver. The song was called Consecrated and Consumed, and it's off of their new LP, which is out now. It's called Sulfuric Disintegration. I'm probably saying these words wrong, but I think I'm right. Sulfuric Disintegration, and that's on Profound Lore. Go find that immediately. I believe it's their third LP. These guys have gotten more impressive as years have gone on. I remember when they just popped up and they were playing Baltimore on one of the A389 Fest years back, and they were nobodies, you know? Now, several years later, well, they're little more than nobodies. They're almost somebodies because they're opening Getting It Out Podcast. That's a big role to have, depending on, you know, what you think of it, I guess. Anyway, what do we got going on in this episode? Speaking of new albums, Within the Ruins has a new album coming out. It's called Blackheart, and we're going to talk all about that on this episode in an interview with vocalist Steve Tynan. So, let's get moving.
Yeah, what's good, all you bitches and bitches? It's the illustrious Hot Dome, back at it again with another podcast intro. He said, oh, you want to do a podcast intro for the Getting It Out podcast? I said, oh, shit, I got to write a rap verse, don't I? He said, no, you don't got to write a rap verse. It's a hardcore podcast. I said, all right, I think I can maybe make that happen. Let's see what we can do. Kick it. Make family out of friends, make friends out of enemies. Peace to my family, make friends till they bury me. All the places we've been, we're never sitting it out. We be getting it in, where you getting it out? I said all the places we've been, we're never sitting it out. We'll be getting it in, where you getting it out? Get in and out! Alright, motherfuckers, you're in the right place at the right time. Rest in peace, Shay Money, and LFTW forever!
Okay, so here I sit before you in front of my podcast microphone with a ice-cold Coors Light. You can tell so by the mountains. They're blue on the can. That means you're allowed to drink it now. That's the rules with Coors Light. Like a real dad. I'm feeling like a real dad. Doing real things, talking to my $17 podcast microphone. $17. I bought this thing for $17, and I'm now on episode 147 with it. I think that's a pretty good deal. Anyway, speaking of being a cool dad, I showed my stepdaughter and my wife the wonderful world of West Side Story yesterday, which is, in my opinion, the only musical that has ever existed, the only one worthy of ever existing. A lot of dance fighting, which is what you want when you're looking for entertainment, of course. That's what you want. You want dance fighting and sometimes crying. And you can get that all with West Side Story. And it's something that I used to watch frequently, apparently, as a child. I remember it nearly word for word. All the songs, for sure. Okay, I shouldn't say I remember the dialogue word for word, but I definitely remember the music and the songs. And I could sing them for the most part to this day, especially Officer Krupke. Officer Krupke, I believe, as the kids say, is a bop. That's a great song. I need to bring that back. Put that on the radio now, or put that on a Spotify playlist. See how well it does. That's going to the top of the charts, I guarantee you. Krupke, you know? It's the first time I ever watched it with subtitles on, so it was the first time I saw a lot of the dialogue, a lot of things they were saying. When I was a kid, I thought they were saying fucking, but they're saying buggin' in one of the songs. Which makes way more sense for, you know, a 1960s family musical. Is it a family musical? Would this have been considered raunchy back in the day? It was kind of raunchy now, you know, with the murdering and all, and the that's really it. Just with the murdering, I don't think that qualifies as raunchy. Speaking of raunchy, though, the election's kind of over. Not really. They're still tallying shit. What the fuck? There aren't that many. There's no way they can actually still be counting things. That's fine that they are. I don't care. They can count for months. I think the outcome's still the same. And I got to tell you, that the reason that I'm airing this interview this week is because it's kind of topical. We were talking a little bit about the election in the beginning of it, and I don't want to play that like several weeks from now and have it be way out of date. So we're only like 1 week out of date on this one, and that's okay. But yeah, it's funny. Like, so Joe Biden has, at this point, you know, he's won the election. I think it's going to stick, and that's great. That's the way I wanted it to go when it came down to these two options. So for me, yay. But it's all. I also realized that it's like. Do you ever see the, speaking of old movies you watched as a kid, do you ever see An American Tale with this little mouse named Fievel or however you say his name? And he's going to go to, he's coming from like England or wherever. I don't know where the fuck his homeland is. I don't think they really covered that. Maybe they did, and I just forget. But anyway, Fievel, maybe he's coming from Cuba. I don't know. He's going to America, and he's really excited. And him and a bunch of mice are on this boat, and they're stoked because they think there's no cats in America. So they're coming over here, and they're in this boat, and they're singing the song, "There are no cats in America. And the streets are made of cheese," or something like that. I feel like that's how we're all acting right now. Like, we didn't just elect another fucking stupid politician. That's unfair. I shouldn't call them stupid because they're clearly geniuses. But, you know, it's just another guy. We can go back to not caring about it because we don't have this inflammatory bigot piece of shit out there just running his fucking mouth any chance he gets. And I'm all for that. You know, shut him down. Although, like, I really like this whole silent... kind of silent temper tantrum thing he's doing now, and I hope it carries on forever. Please do not concede. And also, you know, another thing I noticed in my neighborhood, I noticed it with one house, and it kind of bothered me. I noticed the Trump flags are down and the bumper stickers are off his car, and I don't think that's fair. I think you should have to wear that shit. I think you should have to continue to wear your red hat just for like a year or something, you know, just so we know, like, so we don't forget that you were with that. Like, you know, and don't be ashamed. You've been so proud. So don't be ashamed now, all right? Hang on to that. Okay, so before I fall way too far down my unqualified rabbit hole, I'm just going to get to what I do know how to do, and that's bring you compelling, interesting, and, well, not really thought-provoking, but it depends if you like music. Particularly heavy music, interviews with musicians. This time around, as I mentioned in the intro, is Steve Tynan, the vocalist for Within the Ruins. They got a new record called Blackheart. It's coming out on E1 Music, E1 Heavy. E1 Heavy. It's particularly heavy music on E1. And it's coming out November 27th, I believe. So you've got plenty of time to get yourself familiar with them, but I'm going to help with that. I'm going to play you a song here. It's called Deliverance off of Blackheart. There's a video out for it. Go find that on YouTube. You're going to listen to the song Deliverance, and then you're going to listen to my interview with Steve. So how about that? Let's do it all right now.
Shadows, we're finding it, the darkness, with the other towers.
I'm getting better as the day goes on, I think.
I think so too.
I was just I don't give a fuck what side you stand on, but I was just watching Fox News because that's been the funny one today, and they were just doing some press conferences, and I'm in Pennsylvania, and some fucking douchebag is talking about how he officially declares Pennsylvania Trump country, and it's just really funny to me that they're losing their fucking minds right now.
Oh, it sounds like we're on the same side, brother.
Yeah, I assume so, but you know, yeah. You never fucking know.
It's pretty safe to assume, especially with musicians and stuff, but you never know, dude. I mean, like, even if you don't like Trump per se, I mean, I could still see people that lean Republican because of, you know, tax reasons or whatever the fuck, but it seems like you could assume because it seems so obvious, but I don't know.
Yeah. But fucking, you know, I figured out through, it took me, I guess, 4 years, that I don't fucking know. I don't know where anybody stands until they open their fucking mouth anymore. And unfortunately, usually when that's, when it's a surprise, it's a disappointment.
Oh, yeah, man. And a lot of people don't have any problem opening up their mouth anymore, especially the way the past 4 years have gone. So.
Yeah, well, hopefully, maybe, I don't know. Whatever the result is right now, I'm fucking laughing my ass off, so... So there we go.
Oh yeah, you know he's scared.
Dude, these people are sweating. Like the anchors and the lawyers, they are fucking losing it. It is hilarious. Anyway,
I mean, he's calling. He's trying to get all these votes. The counting stopped. I'm trying to keep up like throughout the day. I've had a busy ass day, but I'm trying to like keep up as much as I can. I think he's scared. I think he's scared. That's why he's trying to like get the voting stopped. It's like, okay, if you want to stop now, that's fine, but you're losing the popular vote and the Electoral College right now. So if we stop counting, you still lose, dude.
Right, and it's funny what they're saying. They were just Rudy Giuliani was just saying he wants to do something, whatever. I want to do this in Pennsylvania. And like, fine, then go do that in Nevada too, because now you lose. Now, if you do that right now, if you shut it down, then you fucking lost, and it's 270, and you lost. Anyway, I gotta admit, I've never given a shit this much about an election before, and it took all the garbage. It took him for me to give a shit too, which is bad on my side, but whatever. That's just honesty.
Dude, I get it too, though. Like, that's just, like, I didn't really care about politics too much up until, like, 4 years ago when it kind of came down to this. I was just kind of getting my feet wet with politics, and I'm still very green and new to how a lot of things actually even work, but I've got my opinions on a lot of shit, but it sucks that it took something being this bad for you to care about how politics are done and need to be done. So I'm with you too. Like, it sucks that, like, I mean, you care now, I care now, but it sucks that things had to be so shitty for you to care. Like, why can't things just be like, oh, I have to choose between all of these good things or all of these good things? No, it's either like all these shitty things need to change. And so, you know, I'm with you. I totally get it.
Well, I'm wondering how much my attention span is going to stay. Cause like I was saying, I was talking to my wife earlier and I was like, I think what I'm looking forward to is just ignoring the president again. I don't give a fuck what he does because, you know, it never seems to affect me, which I know is totally naive shit, but, yeah. You know, whatever.
It is, but in a lot of cases, you're not wrong, though. There's some things that just don't really affect you, and it's like, you know what, I kind of miss not having... In a way, though, you're not worried about it. You're not having to worry, like...
Exactly, yeah.
What riots are coming next, or what anti-science beliefs are coming next, or what racist bullshit is coming next. Like, I don't want to have to worry about these things. I'd rather just live my goddamn life and not be stressed out all the time, like...
Yeah, I'm happily ignorant, you know?
Yeah, I'd rather be ignorant about it. I'd rather not have to know.
But anyway, so
yeah, sure.
Obviously, I mean, obviously, we had to talk a little bit about that because that's what's fucking happening right now. But the whole thing here, and what I'm calling you to talk about, obviously, is your band Within the Ruins and your new record Blackheart, which comes out what, November 27th.
Correct. Yeah, November 27th, Black Friday.
Ooh, will it be on sale?
I think it'll be what albums normally cost, but you know, I don't know. Maybe there'll be Black Friday sales. You know, it could be.
Yeah, you know,
I'm actually not sure. That's something I should figure out.
Stumped you on the first one. Good. So
yeah, great.
So this is the band's what, sixth album? Fifth or sixth?
Six.
Six, and, but it's your first, right?
It's my first, yeah. I've been in for a little over 2 years now. And within 6 months or so, 7-8 months, something like that, within the first year, we put out a couple singles called World Undone and Resurgence that were to give people a taste of how I sound and kind of introduce them to the new guy. And then shortly after those is when Joe started writing. The writing process for this record has been pretty long, but yeah, my first full length with the band though. Yeah. So it's kind of a big chapter here.
Okay. Well, so what's your history with Within the Ruins then? Like, where did they come onto your radar?
So our bassist Paolo was, me and him were in a band together for almost a decade called Silence the Messenger. So we have already known each other for a long time. And then probably around 2009, Ruins was touring off the first record, Creature. And anytime they would play in San Antonio, we would hop on the show. Or if they played anywhere in the area, we would either hop on or just go hang out. And like, our bands became friends like right away, 10, 11 years ago. And probably, I think it was around 2015, 16, they were losing a bass player, and Powell played guitar in our old band, but Joe hit him up and was like, hey, can you play bass for All-Stars tour that we have coming up? And so he did that and ended up actually joining the band. Silence the Messenger fell apart because it was just a bunch of behind-the-scenes stuff. And then I was actually just kind of sitting around for a couple of years, and in the dead center of a big, like, 5-week U.S. headliner the band was doing, Tim had to go to the hospital and had to go home. So Joe was, I think they were driving, I forget who was driving, but Joe was like, fuck, do we know any singers? And Paolo was like, we know Steve, he's just sitting at home right now. And Joe was like, what the fuck, why didn't we think of this sooner? And so they were doing a couple shows after Tim had to leave and before I flew out. I think it was in California somewhere. They did a few shows, like a couple guys from the tour package filled in and just, or they played some instrumental sets. And I did the last half of that tour. I just put together a binder real quick of the set list and typed out the songs and was just studying. Like, I was already familiar with everything because our bands were friends, and I was, even though we were like friends, I was still a fan of the music anyway. So sure. I was already familiar with a lot of the tracks, but it's different when you actually have to perform them and learn all the details and stuff. You could drink a beer and like just watch them live and be like, yeah, cool. And then, but then when you have to actually learn parts, you're like, oh, I had no idea this is what was being said, or how it was, what the, where things were enunciated, that kind of thing.
So yeah.
I think I learned like 10 or 11 songs, or at least was attempting to, within a few days. And I just finished that tour, and the holidays kind of came and went. And then the start of that next new year, Joe was like, hey, so how do you feel about doing this full time and hopping on board? I think we're kind of at that place where it's time to part ways with him and we're ready to do something different. And it kind of just makes a lot of sense. And at the time, I was getting used to the idea of not being in a band anymore. I was kind of getting used to that, you know, quote, normal life or whatever. And I was kind of just starting to slowly accept the idea that maybe my time in bands has come and went. But it took me a little bit, but then I realized that I was hesitant, but then I was like, I need to do this. I'd be really mad at myself down the road if I don't. So I joined the band, and now it's like kind of a super group almost. Like, so me and Paolo from our old band are now half of Within the Ruins now, so... It turned out you really couldn't ask for an easier transition into a band. It's been great, man.
That's awesome. But you got, geographically, you guys are pretty far apart, right?
Yeah. I mean, it's not completely awful, but like Paolo and I are here in San Antonio, Texas, and then Joe and drummer live out in Westfield, Massachusetts. So we're about halfway across the country. So it makes the writing situation interesting. Not bad, because Joe writes all the tracks and puts them in a Dropbox, and then I would write to him, and then we would just fly out to his studio and record them. But we're split up, but we make it work just fine.
Yeah, I guess
it's so much easier to do that these days.
Yeah, technology makes it pretty simple. I know people doing it across country, you know, so I guess halfway across the world isn't too, or halfway across the country. Oh, sorry. I know people doing halfway across the world, so halfway across the country, I guess, isn't too bad. Yeah. Especially if you got access to the shit that you need. It's real interesting talking to, like, you know, I always find this similar things like this when I talk to younger guys, and I talk to a lot of older guys too. And yeah. And they like accept it and they use it, but it's with this reluctance and like stubbornness that it's this not the way it's supposed to be, you know, holding on to something the way it was. And it's weird the way that, you know, some people embrace it and others don't.
Oh yeah. Joe's very much about like, well, I mean, none of us are like old heads or anything, but like, we're also not super, we're not like in our early 20s or anything anymore. So, you know, we're all like early to mid 30s and, but still kind of right in the middle, but like very much accepting of new technology and always trying new stuff and finding ways to make shit easier or better. We're very about it.
Right.
In our band. So.
Well, Within the Ruins has been around for much longer than I thought. Like I knew the name, right? And I was familiar with the music.
Yeah.
But when I look back, it's like, fuck, in 2003? Like, you know, at least that's what the internet tells me is when it got started. And I would have never guessed. But going back and, you know, I went through the last few, I went through all the records, and the sound certainly has changed, but it's not been like this giant, there hasn't been these giant leaps. There's just been this cool evolution and I don't know what fucking the correct genre tag is for this, and I hate trying to figure that out, but...
Don't even worry about it.
Yeah, no. I've been losing sleep over it, so... no, I'm kidding. But you know, there's the progressive nature of it, but there's also, you know, I hate the term deathcore, even though I don't think I don't know, because there's some negative connotations with that, or at least there used to be.
There are. I mean, it's kind of like a generally accepted term, but when somebody says it, you know exactly what they're talking about, though, so...
Right, but I think when people say it, it's like the way people used to, and now it's kind of flipped, but people used to say when you used to get called nu metal, it was like, oh shit, they're nu metal. And you know, that was like an instant like death blow. And I think deathcore was like that for a little bit, and I think that's turning too, and people aren't looking at it that way. I don't know, pointless, but yeah.
No, yeah, but I get what you mean though. The whole subgenre thing is annoying, but it has its uses, and I mean, it's kind of how, with the introduction of the internet, it's just how people divide things up and what they want to label it as. And like, I keep up with it because I understand, but like, do I give a shit about it? No.
Right.
And to be fair, we're not a nu metal band, but if you had said nu metal, dude, I'm a giant nu metal kid. That's what I grew up on. So like, nu metal's my shit. But
I did too.
Even have been offended.
I was just going through my. I'm on this quest to listen to all my CDs, which is going to be an endless quest, and it's a really foolish thing for me to try to do. But I was moving my stuff back in from the storage unit. I just did this renovation of my house, so I'm moving stuff around, and I'm like, all right, now I'm going to go through these CDs and listen to every single CD I own, which is it's a couple thousand, right? So I did this with my records earlier in the year, which was. That's only maybe like 2,000. So that was manageable. And it took me from March to July. And that's while working from home, you know, so it's not hard to do.
Yeah.
But anyway, my point is that I came across this whole bin of nu metal CDs from, you know, the late 90s, early 2000s. And I just finished going through them probably like yesterday. So I'm with you on the nu metal.
On the nu metal.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice.
What's your deep cut for nu metal? Who's your unknown nu metal favorite?
My unknown nu metal favorite?
Yeah, like what's your most which nu metal band do you think didn't get enough love?
Ooh, okay. There's a band called Twisted Method out of Florida.
I know the name, but I don't think I've had any CDs.
Okay, so if you look them up, they'd be your very typical like nu metal, but like to the next level. Like they had the look totally down: spiked hair, ball chain, necklaces, painted fingernails. But like if you Google a picture like of like old promos, they only had one record out. I think it was called Cape Coma or Escape from Cape Coma. One of the dudes, the singer of that band, actually, I want to say, I could be wrong on this, but I should know. I think the singer of that band plays guitar in Dope now.
Okay, yeah.
But they only put out the one record. They had, like, at least one Ozfest appearance. I forget what year it was. But they only had the one record, and they did some stuff here and there. And I got to see them live one time at a venue in Utah. It was sick, but didn't get enough love. And they actually had a really sick sound. It was fast, but the singer actually was actually a really good vocalist. Cool screams, had really great melodies and harmonies. Also, just great. But some, you know, shit goes the way it goes, and especially with nu metal, if you weren't Korn or Limp Bizkit or Slipknot, you know, Linkin Park, you know, then it was tough, you know. So they were one of those lower tier bands that I felt like, man, this is a solid nu metal band. Just didn't get the right push, I don't think.
Yeah, there's got to be several of them. There was a brief window,
there's a bunch. There's a bunch, dude. Wait, what would you say? Give me yours. You got to have one too, I'm sure.
Oh, I don't know if they didn't get the proper. I mean, there's all right. I'm looking here. Endo was one that I really liked.
Endo. Yeah. Man. That second record, like the first one, that first record was very nu metal, and the second one was more of like hard rock. But I actually liked that second record better. Was it Songs for the Restless or what is it? Hold on.
I only had Evolve.
Okay, you only had Evolve. Yeah, Evolve was cool. It was very nu metal-y, like electronic-y nu metal. Yeah. Yeah, once that second record happened, Songs for the Restless is what I had it right.
I'm looking now. They're sitting on my desk. There's some that I thought was good back then, and now I listen to it and realize they fucking suck really bad. Like, they're really bad. And like one of them, for example, Darwin's Waiting Room, it's not good. It's just not good.
Yeah.
Like, I can't even defend it. I'm like, wow, I liked that. Huh.
Oh man, good call on the Endo though. That's fun. That's one of the bands that I like. If I ever get into a nu metal conversation, I'll usually bring up Endo. Eventually, we'll get there. See how deep somebody actually did go into nu metal. You know, I was that kid for sure, man. I was always digging, trying to find stuff.
That's funny. Now the time's going on. We can all come out. We can go stand in the sun now again and be like, we are the people. It's like, all right. Here's this thing about this, and I think you're gonna. I think a lot of late 2000s metalcore, deathcore, all that stuff is going to have the same kind of thing. Like, where, like we mentioned before, nu metal was shit on for so long after it was popular. But the fucking genre sold millions upon millions. It was like the last, type of music to sell. It's like everybody shits on Kid Rock, but that motherfucker is like 3 million times platinum. Who bought the fucking records if everybody hates him?
Dude, I bought that Devil Without a Cause album. I mean,
I think I had it. I don't know. I might have.
Like, I disagree with like all of his like politics and shit, but like, sure, as an actual musician, the dude can pull off nu metal, he can pull off country, he can pull off like rap, like he can do a lot of stuff, man. He's actually a talented dude. Whether you know think he's trash or not is a separate issue, but if you separate the musician from his like personality, the dude's actually a talented guy. And nu metal did get a lot of shit. But, like, see, and I'm sure you noticed this, too. I'm glad we're having this conversation. I'll nerd out about nu metal all day long, man. But, like, I grew up on it. I loved it. And it's what inspired me to start singing, because I was listening to guys like John Davis and Corey Taylor and Chester Bennington and stuff. And, like, just I fell in love with the anger, but the raw grittiness that those guys brought to the table. But they could sing well at the same time and go back and forth. I loved it. And then after the craze kind of ended, it was like cool to shit on nu metal and be like, oh, you fucking listen to blah, blah, blah. And like, I was always that guy that was like, yeah, man, I still listen to that. I still think it's cool. Like, it's not the current wave of what's going on in heavy music, but I still like it. I still enjoy it. And now all the kids that grew up listening to nu metal have incorporated it into metalcore and deathcore. And it's just, they all grew up on it. And if they're in a band now, they're like, oh, we can bring it back. And like, after it was not cool and now it's cool again, I'm just like, I always thought it was cool. I mean, I like that it's kind of made a comeback because it's just put a new spin on what's going on currently, and I'm about it. But for all those people that used to like talk shit about it and then just ride the wave now, dude, whatever, man. I was always going to CD shops and buying albums and sitting in my room and just looking at the CD booklets and shit like nonstop, just I was super about it. I'm not going to ever deny that I listened to nu metal or ever talk shit about it. It had its issues, but I took it for what it was, and I fell in love with it. Whatever.
That's no, and you're absolutely right. And I know for myself, I shunned it at one point, but I also noticed that I never got rid of the CDs, you know. It's funny that you say like looking through the. Through the CDs, because as I've been doing this, right, I've been looking through the liner notes of all these CDs as I do it, and like I remember like page for page these booklets because of how much I used to I used to look through them. And I was actually having a conversation with my wife yesterday, kind of rolled this into that, where we were talking about when I was in my room as a kid, I wasn't doing anything that was, I don't know, like suspicious, because I wasn't on the fucking internet or anything. I didn't have a computer. I didn't have a phone that could get on the internet. All I was doing, like, everybody knew what I was doing in my room because I was just listening to music loudly and looking through CDs. Like that was the whole thing. Yeah. And that's my nu metal years. I think mostly, that's, not all, but mostly.
No, it's exactly what I was doing. I didn't ever like do drugs or drink when I was never that kid that was like, I need to fuck around with weed and I need to sneak around and drink booze. Like I never got into it. I had like a couple friends that liked it, but it was never my thing. I just didn't like it at the time. Like I'm just a drinker now. I don't do anything else. But when I was a kid though, yeah, I didn't do anything else in my room, man. I had a silver Sony boombox that I just constantly had something playing on, and I was sitting around reading the booklets all the time because I appreciated it. And I would, my whole room was decorated with pictures and posters from Circus magazine.
Same thing.
Unfolded,
Circus yeah, and Hit Parader.
Unfolded CD booklets. Yeah, exactly, man. And I was just so about it. Like it just consumed me. And you're a teenager, so you want to like have your shit all around you, you know? And I did. I had the music booklets all along the edge of the walls, you know. Like I had everything, man. I was just a total nu metal nerd, I guess you could say. Really, I'm right there with you, man.
You know, the one thing I'm thankful for from that era, though, is that my mom never let me dress like a dipshit. Like, like she would let me buy band t-shirts and stuff, but she didn't, like, if I was like, I want a pair of Jenkos, she's like, nope, it's not fucking happening. It just, like, and now, like, back then, I was like, that was a bummer. But now it's like, hell yeah, thank you, mom. Now there's no pictures of me looking like a jackass from back then.
My parents let me to a degree. I didn't take it to an extreme, but I had a couple pairs of like trip pants from Hot Topic with the zippers, and I would go back and forth from wearing like skater clothes to sometimes goth clothes. Like at the same time I was super into nu metal, I was also getting really big into pop punk. So I was getting into Blink-182 and Newfound Glory and Sum 41 and stuff. So I was kind of teetering, and I was trying to find a balance between like, you know, there's you could dress like a Fred Durst kind of skater nu metal, or you could dress gothic nu metal. Like there's, you know, it had its clothing trends.
It's had a range.
Find a balance between. Yeah. And so I kind of did both, but I do have a few old pictures of me in like baggy t-shirts with like flame bracelets and like a ball chain necklace and stuff and spiked hair. I did it. I mean, I fucking went for it, but they didn't let me take it super, super far, but they let me experiment and kind of find myself though. So I'm always appreciative, you know, to them of letting me kind of find my own path about it though.
No, it's cool too. And you know, it's as like now as a parent, it's weird where you want to try and like I don't know how I'm not to that point yet, right? But you want to like you want to encourage your kids to be themselves, but at the same time you don't want them to, I don't know, go too far. Yeah, and it's like, well, how do you fucking, where do you find it? And like, I don't know, you just have to, it just has to happen.
It kind of just does, and you kind of just have to, like, I'm not a parent, I would imagine, like, I've wondered the same thing, because my parents probably, at certain times, were probably sitting back being like, are we making the right choice here? But like, I was just a kid that loved music. Like I said, I didn't do drugs or drink or anything. I just loved music and bands and shit, and that's what I dove into. So they were probably walking a fine line with it, but like, he's not causing any harm, just he's finding himself, he's a teenager, whatever. So I would imagine probably doing something along the same lines with my kid.
Right yeah,
when the time's right.
That's the fucking thing, you parenting, you figure it out on the fly, because you know, how else are you supposed to have any experience? Anyway, let's go back to talking about your music instead of
hey, yeah,
the music that we liked when we were teenagers. So
all good though, man. All good.
Yeah, yeah, no, I'm all for it. So this being your first album with Within the Ruins, and like you said, you did those other two singles. How involved are you in the writing process? As far as are you handling all lyrics, or do other people give you input? What's going on there?
Yeah, it's pretty much all me. I came prepared with a bunch of stuff that I wrote previously. That I keep a note section in my phone for any time I come across ideas in my head, even if I'm like driving around or something. Like I've literally pulled over into like a parking lot and jotted out my idea. You know, if I come up with a cool phrase or a cool concept, I'll write it down so I don't lose it. You know, I've learned that lesson the hard way. Like I think I can remember a cool idea that I had, and then the next day I'm like, what the fuck was I thinking yesterday? That was super cool, and now I don't know what it is anymore. So I'll always write down my stuff. So I came fully prepared with a bunch of things that I had to get off my chest and ideas that I had. And so as far as lyrics go, it's all me. But you know, stuff changes a little bit here and there when you actually hit the studio.
Sure.
Like, oh, let's change this phrasing to this, or maybe we can add this. Or for some of the choruses, I very much was like, okay, here's, I wrote down a very, I like to leave the choruses kind of open. If I know it's potentially going to be something with some, like some singing, I try and keep it pretty basic on my end, so the clean singing can shine through. So like I'll kind of work out a chorus with Joe and Paolo, you know, around those parts of the songs. But Joe was actually just pretty pumped that I was coming in with full songs and pretty much ready to go. Like I didn't want to get to the studio and be stressed out and like have to come up with shit on the spot. I'm a lot more prepared when it comes to stuff like that. I will sit down and pick out a song from the Dropbox that like Joe has put in there, and I'll set up either a little Bluetooth speaker and just kind of have a pen and paper out and pick what lyrics I think actually fit the tone of the song. And I'll just start writing and I'll figure out my phrasing and have the song as prepared as possible. And then when I get there, I'm just like, I'll just do a rough take of what I had in my brain. And so it's a skeleton kind of put together. And then Joe's like, okay, I see what you did here. So what you did here, blah, blah, blah. And very little of it was changed. I mean, some stuff will change here and there. It's never going to be exactly what you wrote down specifically. That's just not how that works. But
right.
Lyric wise, but yeah, it's all me. I had shit I wanted to say, and I got it out. So
yeah,
yeah,
that's great. And you've got a big range yourself. Do you do all the cleans, or is that also Paolo?
That's Paolo. He does all the cleans.
He does all the cleans.
I can sing. Yeah, I can sing like from sitting around in my basement listening to new metal bands. Like,
right.
I was screaming along to like Linkin Park and like dudes like Chester that knew how to sing. And so I was kind of teaching myself without knowing it back then how to hit notes and do it. So I kind of have inadvertently been doing it for a while. Like, but I honestly kind of prefer if like Paolo likes to sing, he does a lot of cool piano and acoustic stuff on his own time. And he always wanted to sing in our old band. So this is a good time for him to shine through and actually let that happen. So I'm absolutely like super cool with him taking the reins on that. And like if I have an idea in my head, like I can bounce it back and forth with him. So that's cool that we're both musically inclined to do that. But Paolo does all the cleans though on the record.
Yeah, well, it sounds like you guys as a band are all very proficient at what you're at your skills. You know, as far as, I don't know. You can hear it in the songs, and it sounds like you can hear it in. I can hear it in the confidence you all have in each other to just do your part and do it well. There's a few instrumental tracks in. Well, more than a few instrumental tracks in Within the Ruins History. When you're doing a live set, do you guys incorporate a lot of those? I know live shows are. You know, who the fuck knows when that's going to happen again. But when you're playing live,
yeah.
Do you do a lot of instrumentals? And what do you do if you do?
Well, like not usually. So Joe does have the Ataxia series that everybody loves, and I'm super about it too. But usually, when you're doing, like say you're not headlining and you're just, you know, in the middle of the tour package somewhere, or you know what have you, you're getting five or six songs, and you're not going to use an instrumental track in a five or six song set,
right?
But the headliner that I hopped on, they did a a really cool thing where he took pieces of all the Ataxias and made like a, I think it was like 7.5 minute medley on that tour. So kind of right in the middle of the set, there's like a 7.5 minute break where he just took sections from each Ataxia from each record and Frankensteined them together and made it all fit to what he was calling the Ataxia medley. And they were promoting it and everything because people love those tracks. And he was like, we need to do something special for this headliner. And on that particular run, yeah, they had put together an instrumental piece. But what I would do is just kind of walk off stage for a little bit and just kind of chill, which honestly helped me out a lot because I was doing 10, 11 songs every night and stuff that I wasn't familiar, like didn't have up in my head, you know, like muscle memory. Like with my old band, it was all muscle memory because I wrote all those songs. I performed them in the studio. I performed them live. I could do it sober, drunk, whatever. Like it was all my shit. Like I knew it. So, yeah. But with learning all the Ruin stuff, like that's, you know, as even being a fan though, it's not my material. So it's not stuck in my head, you know? So I was appreciative of the time that I would get to, take a sit real quick during that medley and kind of go over my binder notes real quick. And, when I was still trying to learn,
I bet. And that's why I asked. Because I sang for a band briefly for like a year, whatever. We were only around for a very short time. And number one, I hated it. Well, I wanted to love it, but I hated it because I was awful at it. But it's so fucking hard. It's not fun. I didn't enjoy it at all. And like, it's such a pain in the ass sometimes. So I'm sure, and I realize I have the pessimistic attitude, but I realize it must be nice to have a break, and especially when your band can more than handle it on their own to be able to go off and do something like that, and when your fans want to see it.
Yeah, they want to see it, and plus, like when I hopped on that tour, I was sitting like Silence and Messenger had been broken up for over a year and a half or so, almost 2 years at that point. So I wasn't playing shows at the time. So I was getting my voice back and like physically getting back into show shape, you know? And
yeah.
So I was very appreciative of having a break in the middle of like a, you know, 50-minute, hour-long set that I was not used to playing. I would enjoy every second of that break during the medley for sure.
Yeah, I don't blame you. I see for this record you guys already have. Oh, did we mention it's called Blackheart? I don't know if we said that yet. The record's called Blackheart. But you guys have put out two videos for this already, at least two that I've seen, Deliverance and the title track, Blackheart. Is there a theme going on through this thing? Did I see that right, or am I imagining something here?
Oh, you mean like visual things?
I feel like there was the key, at least, was in both videos. Yeah. Okay, all right, so I didn't make that up?
Nope. No, you did not.
All right.
No, you did not. No, and I appreciate you actually taking time to notice, and I think people will figure it out as time goes on, but I've seen a couple comments here and there, like what's the, like especially when Just Deliverance was out, the only thing like that you could see, like that key was the visual in that whole video, but nobody really knew what it was.
Yeah.
And then you see the key again in the Blackheart video. Yeah, there is kind of a theme, and there's like also the like blood and black goo going on there.
Yeah.
ties in also with the Blackheart video and the third one for Devil and Me. It's kind of connected there as well.
Okay.
The key, if you look, is actually there's a few of them on the album artwork. The guy that's on the front there, he's got like one that he's dropping out of his hand, and then there's a like two or three on the ground by his feet, and he's got a cage on his head, which is just representing being trapped in your own head with your own thoughts and not feeling like you can really escape, and you're kind of just stuck. And the keys are representative of the multiple attempts to try and get out of that.
Okay.
So we use the key. We try to keep a lot of the same elements in each video from the album artwork and have it all kind of tie together and not just be like, here's some songs with album artwork that doesn't really match that, you know, blah, blah, blah. Like it's thought out, and we, you know, I wanted the stuff to be, because a lot of the songs are all connected except for maybe a couple of them. they relate to each other and stem from the title track Blackheart. But yeah, you're not incorrect. There's a theme going on there. Yeah, it's
good.
Connected. Yeah.
Good. And I wish I had seen it on the album artwork. So I have seen the album artwork, but this is part of my problem with listening to music digitally, is that I just see it on my phone, you know, so I don't really get it. I can't get in there and check it out. But
you're not sitting in your room with a booklet yet.
Right. Yeah, exactly. So watching that Blackheart video, what were you drinking and were you really drinking?
The beer I was drinking was a stout, I believe. I honestly couldn't tell you which one. It was a couple months ago, but it was a stout. It was a Tinbridge stout. And he slid over Jameson to me. And those, the couple shots that I do take in the video. It's all real. It's all real. For a couple reasons. One, I wanted it to be real. I didn't want it to look like, oh, he's drinking, you know, dyed water or chocolate milk or something stupid, or, you know, and I wanted to look like what's better than real booze.
Exactly.
Use the booze. Yeah. But I think kind of like also method acting in a way too, because the idea behind that video is that I'm drinking because of what I have going on in my own head and I'm overdoing it and get kicked out because of that. And drinking was a big part of some of the stuff that I was going through. It was just, I was doing a lot more than I should, and I was using it as a coping mechanism, and it's in there for a reason. And I wanted it to seem real and look real. And what also helped with that was that shot was done at like 10:30 in the morning after a long day of doing two videos the day before. I was up late. It was just a long day in general. Then I was up late the night before, had to wake up early because we had to fly out later that day. So we shot that scene pretty early. So I was tired. So the way you see me, like looking kind of hungover and tired, I absolutely was. And I wanted to add the actual alcohol on top of that.
So I like your commitment.
And then two, I mean, I did. When there's the shot of me getting thrown out into the street, I did that like, I think, five or six times. Like I wanted to really get thrown down, take a tumble, have it look real. You know, I mean, I don't care if I get hurt. Kind of like, I mean, not seriously hurt, but like if I get scratched up or beat up or whatever, like I don't really care. I want it to look good. So I was pretty committed to it. And then, but also too, like I don't think anybody would be like watching a Within the Ruins video. I think it's pretty widely known that we're drinkers. So I don't think anybody would believe it if we used fake liquids in the shot. So I think people just poo-poo it if that were the case. I'm like, let's just put beer in the glasses, man. And then we, like, some of the guys sitting on the side were like, really just Joe Paolo and Joe's brother. You can kind of see Joe's brother Nick in one of the shots. He's one of the extras, kind of close to me, I think. Just they had some beers too while they were just kind of in the background of some of the shots. But it was like, just make it real. Just put real beer in there. So yeah, man, went for it. Super went for it.
Well, I appreciate that. That's the way it should be. Especially drinking Jameson at 10 in the morning. I mean, that's
no breakfast either. That was
that is your breakfast then.
That was breakfast. It was.
So I appreciate the whole cohesiveness of this whole record. And it sounds like there's been a lot of thought put into not only the sound, but also the aesthetic and obviously the videos and if everything's going to follow this through line. I'd imagine this is the biggest record you've ever done. So what do you want people to take away from their listen of Blackheart?
I want for people to, if possible, understand that, like, not only that I was going through stuff, but that people go through stuff. And it's that same feeling I got when I was a kid listening to nu metal. Like, those guys probably were going through some stuff too, and they wanted to write about it and connect with people. And like, I connected with it. I felt something deeper than just listening to a song on the radio. Like I felt the emotion that they were putting into the tracks, and I always appreciated that and loved it as a kid. And I've always wanted to give that back. So to me, I didn't want to write things that didn't mean anything to me, because then I wouldn't, at least right now anyways, I don't know what the second record is going to be like, but I hope I don't have to write this record again. I'll tell you that. But I want people to, at least in some way, feel connected, whether they agree with being sad or they agree with or identify with being angry about stuff. I mean, there's a lot of shit to be angry about right now. And I mean, there's some tracks that you could be applying to your own life. So, I understand that it's different because I'm the new guy and you've been listening to Tim for over a decade. And, I get it. Just like, you know, listen to it, I guess, with an open mind and be, it's the most angriest personal thing that the band has done before. So it's from a writing and even musical level, it's darker than anything that Within the Ruins has put out on previous albums. So, it's going to be a bit of a change, but, people seem to be accepting it, with pretty much open arms and being really positive for the most part. So I'm actually really stoked about it, but yeah, I guess listen to it knowing that it's going to be a little different, but we worked real hard on it. And, I think people are going to like it though. The whole
thing. I think so too. And I think it shows that you guys worked hard on it and, sounds good, looks good. All the, you know, checks all the marks or checks all the boxes. That's what I'm trying to say. So being that obviously touring's off the table, you can't, well, yeah, you're not playing any fucking shows, I'd imagine. I don't know what Texas's deal is or Massachusetts or, you know, whatever. We know what I'm talking to, trying to say. So when this comes out on November 27th, like, what are you looking for? What are you looking forward to? Is it just feedback or, you know, finally getting to let other people hear what you've been working on for so long?
Yeah, definitely that's something we're looking forward to, is the feedback and kind of finally starting this next chapter of the band with me in it. I mean, even now I'm still seeing comments and stuff of like, where's Tim? What happened to Tim? I'm like, I appreciate that you're checking out new stuff, but I've been in the band for over 2 years. Like, come on. I'm ready for people to, you know, dive into this next chapter with us. And yeah, I mean, there's not a whole lot you can really look forward to other than feedback, but we're kind of setting ourselves up for when touring comes back and doing whatever we can to be ready when that time does come. Hopefully sooner than later, but you know, wait till it's safe. Obviously, we're not going to pull a Trapped or a Smash Mouth, you know. And I mean, no offense, I don't give a shit about Trapped, but no, I mean, and I'm not trying to talk shit about Smash Mouth either, because I fucking like All Star, you know, and Shrek's great. But
gotta respect Smash Mouth.
Hey man, give respect where it's due. That's all I'm trying to say. But we're not going to do any of that stuff. We're not, you know, we're going to wait till it's safe, and you know, if we can go overseas or something first. And, you know, if that becomes a safe thing, you might start playing shows elsewhere first before we can play them in the States, but there's not an easy way to tell. But we're just trying to set ourselves up the best that we can. And so are any bands that are releasing stuff right now. It sucks because you want to be able to be on the road and promote your album, but it's just not in the cards right now. So that's why everyone's kind of turning to doing a live stream or whatever you can pull off.
Yeah. And I have a lot of these conversations, and most people are by now falling in the same category where it's, you can't sit on this shit forever. And, you kind of don't want to, you know, lose the opportunity to put the music out. Now that sounds weird, but like listeners are just fucking sitting here too, you know? So, all right, fine. Exactly. You can't play the show, but we can still be listening to your records. So when you can play the show, we're ready and familiar. Yeah, mm-hmm. It's pretty simple.
Yeah, exactly.
But
so it gives you time to sit on it and digest it, and you know, from like a financial standpoint and like from a record label standpoint, yeah, like you'd like to be on the road pushing album sales and that kind of thing. But if you can't, you can't. And in some way, if us giving the music out, or any bands, you know, putting out new stuff during this pandemic and everything, is helping some people take their minds off of it and be like, oh, good, there's at least new music I can listen to take my mind off it, then hey, I mean, it's not a whole lot, but it's better than nothing. And I agree with you. You do kind of, if you sit too long, then you might lose your window. You have to keep keep some hype going, and it's tough because the band has usually taken some time in between each record, and especially now with a new singer, they, you know, we're constantly getting asked, you know, when's a new record, when's a new record, and if you're not touring, like, what do you have to post about? So
yeah,
it's been of a struggle, but now it's finally happening, you know, after all this time, and it's doing the best we can, man.
Again, I think you guys did a good job with it. And you got a backing by a pretty cool label, E1, right? And Good Fight, two mm-hmm. labels in there too. And I know I've had a lot of bands from E1 over the last couple of years, but a few recently, and they're doing a really good job of pushing, especially with their diverse and big label. You know, like, you know, there's the E1 heavy side, but there's a whole bunch of other shit involved with E1. So anyway, they do a surprisingly good job for a label that size to push their smaller, heavier bands, and I think that's cool.
It is really cool, yeah. They're actually really pumped about it. They came out to one of the farewell shows for Tim a couple years ago. Like, a few of the guys from the label wanted to see me kind of live in action and see what the feel was going to be like, how they felt about me, but what they wanted to do for the next record, to kind of give themselves an idea. And right away they were all about it. And then I flew out a few weeks ago to do some more media promo stuff. And they drove down to New York and hung out at the brewery for a day while we did it. And they're all just like really pumped. Everything's going really, really well. And they're all super excited. So I'm grateful, because it's kind of tough, because it's, you know, you've got these like head honcho guys from the label coming down to, a lot of this falls on me, because I'm you know, they're familiar with working with Joe, but they're like, okay, the new guy has to perform, you know, he's got to perform, he's got to deliver, and they're all just like nothing but positivity from those guys, and it's really gratifying. So I'm stoked that they're very on board and willing to be like, now that we need to push this hard. And so I'm glad that you noticed that too, I guess, but they're all about it.
That's great, and I'm glad to hear that everything I don't know. Everything sounds like it's going pretty fucking well for Within the Ruins and yourself. You know, regarding the band and the record. And I don't know about the rest of it. Hey, maybe tonight it gets even better. I don't know. Remains to be seen. But
maybe.
We're heading in the right direction. Only a couple of fucking months of lawsuits on the way, but you know, whatever. At least it'll be funny.
Oh, yeah.
All right, man. Hey, I appreciate you taking the time to have this conversation.
Yeah, man. Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it. I had a lot of fun.
Of course. All right, dude. Hey, take care.
Hey, you too, buddy.
All right. Later, man.
When you lie with the liars, you never wake up to the truth. Take off the mask. Okay.
So there you have it. That was my conversation with Steve of Within the Ruins. That song there you just heard was a title track off of Blackheart called Blackheart. Again, that record comes out November 27th. Go check out the music videos that we were talking about. I played both songs, Deliverance and Blackheart. I don't know if there's a third one out yet or if that one's to come. I forget what he said. But yeah, be on the lookout for that. Check that stuff out. Go check out the whole E1 roster. There's a little something for everybody. There's surprisingly underground stuff, and then there's like super mainstream stuff, and that's just all in heavy music. I mean, we're talking like Ace Frehley to Creeping Death. You know, you got Toxic Holocaust, and you got Crowbar, and you got what else is on there? I forget what else is on there, but anyway, lots of good stuff. Sodom, you got Sodom. By the way, I mentioned or I put it out there on social media that one of the upcoming episodes I'm going to have Tom Angel Ripper from Sodom on as well. A lot of cool ones coming up. Also, there's Brian Tatler from Diamond Head, the classic Diamond Head, Metallica's biggest influence. Well, that's my words, not theirs. Who else do I got coming up? I got Jordan from Chicago hardcore band Karma, who are really awesome. They got a new record coming out on Flat Spot Records. Got a few other cool things in the work. Reserving Dirt Naps. I'm going to talk to my neighbor and friend Ricky Armelino one last time before the year ends out. He's been on every year, so we're going to set that up. You might know him from a very popular band called Ice Nine Kills. He's also has his own band called Hawk. Who knows when we're going to get that done, but we're going to do that. Anyway, lots of cool things on the way as far as podcasts go with getting it out. I can tell you there's a rough date. You've heard me say this before, but there's a rough date of the week after Thanksgiving when gettingitout.net will be launching. So please keep an eye out for that. Until then, just keep listening to whatever the fuck I got going on here. I appreciate it. There's been some huge spikes in listeners recently. So big that I think something was wrong. like it must have been, there must have been a flaw. It must have been a glitch in the matrix because it was massive. Unbelievably big. So it can't be real. But anyway, I appreciate everybody who listens, everybody who checks it out, everybody who shares. That's always most important for me. I try to do what I can myself to spread the word, but that's tedious. You know, that's really it. It's just tedious. And to do it for 3 years every Friday, to just go onto social media and share, is a pain in my ass. So if you could do some of that for me, I'd appreciate it. If you got anything you want to say, anything you want to talk about, anything you want to ask, any suggestions, whatever. I don't know. You want to tell me which bands I need to talk about? I want to hear it. Reach out to me anywhere. The easiest way is to email dan@gettingitout.net, or you can just go to one of the social media pages, the Facebook page, facebook.com/gettingitoutpodcast, or the Instagram @getting_it_out_podcast. There's Twitter too, @gettingitoutpod, but I'm probably not going to see it. Don't check that too often. I generally only go on there when I want to see what the fucking stupid president is saying. And that's about it. That's going to be it for this episode. I want to thank Steve again for coming on and having a cool chat. I enjoyed that one. And the new record, like I said, Blackheart, out November 27th on E1, is very cool. And you should check that out as well. So I got to end this with a song like I always do. And I already know what song I'm going to play because it's from a very cool band that I just became familiar with. But I guess I'm a little late to the party. They're called Undeath. And they got a new record called Lesions of a Different Kind out now on Prosthetic Records. This song, though, what song am I picking? This song is called Entranced by the Pendulum. And I think if you like death metal or heavy music of any kind, you'll enjoy Undeath. So check this out. And please don't forget to subscribe, rate, review, and most importantly, share. If you can give me a 5-star rating on iTunes, you'll be my best friend. Thanks for listening. Bye-bye.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.